Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 19. Man, you know, it's amazing to see the growth of the audience. It's a rebrand of the show. We had a dedicated following, but man, it is smooth 2 to 3 times that on social media now. We are on platforms like Rumble and all kinds of alternative platforms like that, where we are getting hundreds of views on our videos. It's fantastic. So thank you for all the new folks out there tuning in every week. Thank you for all the old hats that continue to tune in. Thank you to our amazing sponsors out there, especially our new sponsor and our guest in the second part this evening, the amazing Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. Stop on by secrettoeverything.com to check out all of her services, her readings, things like that. As many of you know, in the first episode that she was ever on, back in our previous incarnation, she did an auric reading on me where I sent an image to her. She put it through her Aura software, and man, the information that she came up on with me was pretty dead on. It was pretty wild. So stop on by, check that out, secrettoeverything.com. Thank you so much for your support, Dr. McGeorge. We are so glad to have you part of the Curious Realm family. And while you're online checking that out, everybody, make sure to stop on by our live stream sponsor, Webworks Wireless. They are your home for high-speed internet for all. I mean, to tell you folks, I was getting like 40 up inside of the convention center in Houston this last week while doing rebroadcast testing. So I'm here to tell you it works. I'm here to tell you that it is unlimited. I have yet to see a cap, and I put up a good 20 gigs worth of video a month. So stop on by, check it out. Webworkswireless.com is where you want to go. While you're there, make sure to stop on the website of our first guest this evening, Robert W. Sullivan IV.com. He is a best-selling author. He is a lawyer. He is also a Mason and author of The Royal Arch of Enoch, as well as the Cinema Symbolism series. The third book of that just came out. You may have heard him on shows like Coast to Coast, things like that. We will specifically be talking about The Royal Arch of Enoch tonight. We'll be talking about Masonic symbolism in the world around us, how steeped in the world even our media, things like that, are. We will be getting to that conversation right after our news of the week, brought to you by the good old folks at Facebook and our Facebook group. That is where you can catch all of the conversation. Some of the articles that were posted today, out of TheVerge.com, Meta will no longer allow the sharing of, quote, publicly available private home addresses. So no doxing in the metaverse, folks. How about that? Out of independent.co.uk, NASA spots record-breakingly huge comet headed towards us. Breaking news. LifeScience.com, an interstellar object exploded over Earth in 2014. Declassified government data reveals. Out of express.co.uk, RAF Typhoon jets were scrambled above Scotland after squawking, quote, quick reaction alert. And of course, out of New York this morning, NBCNewYork.com, suspect description, a U-Haul with Arizona plates sought in the hunt for Brooklyn subway gunman. That is just some of the news of the week there on our Facebook group, folks. Stop on by, join the conversation, join us there, follow us on Facebook, follow the page. That is where you will get all of the updates, especially updates for things like the upcoming live events, where we will be going to the Bigfoot Roadshow in Mineola, Texas. We will be live streaming from the MUFON Symposium in Denver. We will also be going to the Bigfoot Film Festival here in Texas. We will be going to the Folk Monster Festival. All kinds of stuff. So glad to be doing that. Also, so entirely glad to be featuring our guest this evening, Robert W. Sullivan IV. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Well, hello, Chris. Thank you for having me on Curious Realm. It's my pleasure to be here. No, I'm doing fine. I'm very well tonight. Thank you.
You know, as I told you in the pre-conversation, I was really, really excited to have you on to begin with. But after Oak Island this last week and them literally mentioning the Royal Arch of Enoch and the ceremony involved and it possibly having taken place on Oak Island, it was like the confluence of the universe was just too much. The odds of that happening are just all but nil.
I've been on the History Channel show, the Oak Island show, twice. It was Drilling Down, and I can't remember. It may have been just the Oak Island show, getting into some of the the theory with that is that it could have been the Knights Templar who were hiding treasure there, and there are parallels with the ritual and the burial mound, the subterranean vault there on Oak Island, and it is interesting. I don't know if I it is again a curious parallel between it, and could it be Knights Templar treasure that was hidden there? Who knows? But there is this sort of unique parallel between the Royal Arch ceremonial and Oak Island, and again, it does kind of bring into question, the ritual itself. Is it really trying to convey some sort of lost history or something like that? It is fascinating.
Absolutely, and even the history of the rite itself. Let's start getting into that a little bit real quick. I want to share a snippet. This is from, this is from page 32. Freemasonry's capacity to midwife symbolism into the public vision of order through private hiereticism midwifed the easements over which mathematics framed a new vocabulary linking ordinary day-to-day life to calculus, algebra, geometry, and physics. This was maneuvered adroitly by the esoteric merging of science through masonry in France and America, specifically to enmesh with Catholic educational pedagogies. Of course, you go into the Jesuits, things like that, and spreading this kind of knowledge. Let's start talking about that once again steeped symbolism that masonry has.
Absolutely, and it has a lot of it. You have the Blue Lodge, the symbolism coming out of the Blue Lodge, which has a lot to do with the sun. I would say, the sun is probably the most important symbol in all Freemasonry, and this is especially true in the Blue Lodge, both on an esoteric and exoteric level. Some of it is very, no pun intended, plain as day. With the emblems and things like that. If you go to, even like the websites with Pennsylvania or Maryland, where I am, and you go to the Grand Lodge websites, usually there's an image right there of the sun, right there in your face. And then you get into the high degrees, and again, with the Royal Arch, and again, we have a lot of solar imagery. And it's really a rich history, and at least in my estimation, when you begin to understand the symbolism of the Blue Lodge and then the higher degrees and how they relate to each other, and especially the Royal Arch of Enoch, which I argue in the book is really the most important one, probably of any of the rites in the high degree bodies. And you understand the underlying philosophy, and you understand the Masonic old charges and where this stuff is coming from, you really can start, at least in my opinion, connecting the dots, as it were, and seeing, why is this here, and why is this here, and what's going on with the Erie Canal, and the Federal District, Washington D.C., and Union College of Schenectady, New York, and so many of the state seals and college logos. It all comes back to this idea, what it all really comes back to is that the country was sort of founded as this Masonic Republic, founded by Freemasons. And, you will find really from the get-go, up to present day, just Masonic emblems, symbolism, you know, philosophies just embedded in this country all over the place. And when you have the eye, when you understand it, you'll be able to, see, at least for me, you can see this stuff all over the place. So this was sort of one of my main motivations was to write the first book, The Royal Arch, was to kind of explain this somewhat, and it can be at times very dense history of masonry, and bring it up to speed and get into the stuff that people like to talk about, you know, with the designs and templates and things like that.
Yeah. Well, and I myself, for instance, am a Knight of Columbus.
Okay, there you go.
Be that what it is, you know, you could call it a Catholic secret society, much like the Masons. Nah, really, it's a group of dudes that get together and do a whole lot of things for their community. Is there some stuff that we don't talk about getting in the place? Yeah, absolutely. There's a handshake. There's a word or two that'll get you in the door with or without a membership card. And is that something nefarious? No, not necessarily. Now, just like any government or anything like that, are there actors within that might be? Sure. That's not what we're talking about here. What I would like to get into is where the Royal Arch of Enoch comes into play with,
sure,
with the creation of government, specifically, like you're saying, with the founding of America, things like that. Because yes, each part of Freemasonry, each degree has its own truths that are revealed. And from what I know of people in the 32nd, whenever they get there, many of them, their paradigm is just destroyed. When they get to the 32nd degree and the truths are revealed to them of the 32nd, they're like, what, but this, yeah, but there's something different there. And very much so with the third degree in Knights of Columbus. But let's start getting into that Royal Arch degree real quick and exactly what that is all about.
Sure. It's part, the Royal Arch is not part of the Blue Lodge, which is degrees 1, 2, and 3. It's part of the high degree bodies. And to really, I mean, it's a deep story. I'm going to have to go back in time, because in order to understand the Royal Arch, you have to understand what's going on in the Blue Lodge.
Absolutely.
And I should point out also that the Royal Arch is the highest degree in Freemasonry. It's the 13th in the Scottish, and it's the 7th in the York. I'm a 32nd in the Scottish, but what a lot of people aren't aware of is the rites are out of order. The degrees, the 13th is the end of the, is the end. When you do degrees 14 through 32, you go back in time, and they take place beforehand, before the Royal Arch. So you go through degrees 4 through 13, that's the end. Then 14 through 32 go back in time, and you go through a time before the Royal Arch. So the Royal Arch is the highest degree in Masonry, and it just throws a monkey wrench into everything. People are constantly saying to me the 32nd, 33rd, it's the 13th, is really the highest degree. And what it documents, it's not part of Blue Lodge Freemasonry, which is degrees 1, 2, and 3, but it relates to it. In the third degree, the candidate portrays this solar avatar named Hiram Abiff, and he possesses something known as the Tetragrammaton, which is the name of God. And it's through the correct pronunciation of this word that all learning is possible. And that comes from the Masonic old charges.
Yes.
And he is finishing building Solomon's temple, and three fellow crafts try to blackmail him into saying what the, giving him the word, you know, giving up the word, and he refuses to do it. He basically says, you know, I'll do it once the temple is complete, but not until then. That's not good enough. And they murder him. Ultimately he's buried and resurrected. And again, this is sort of the retelling of what you would want to call the dying and resurrected solar God man. You could call this guy, you know, we call it Hiram Abiff. I mean, you could call it Mithras, Osiris. You could clearly see parallels with, Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
Of course, it all goes back to the sun. It's, you know, the death and resurrection of the sun. At any rate, if you fast forward ahead to the high degrees and you get into the Royal Arch, deals with And it's created, the high degrees come out of something, a place called the College of Clermont in Paris, France. It's an invention of the Jesuits as part of the Counter-Reformation. The high degrees are birthed by a Jacobite Freemason named Andrew Michael the Chevalier Ramsay, who's a very interesting guy. He's a founder of the Royal Society. He was a tutor of Bonnie Prince Charlie. And it deals with this, he puts forth this oration that counteracts Anderson's constitutions, where Anderson said, you know, Freemasonry descends from biblical, you know, stone builders down through the Egyptians, down through the medieval, you know, guilds, yada, yada, yada. Mm. Ramsay breaks with that and says, no, Freemasonry is this, comes from the, you know, Mithraic, Eleusinian, Osirian, Eleusinian mystery religions and was brought back to Europe from the Knights Templar. So he splits with Anderson on that. At any rate, you have the Society of Jesus creating these high degrees as part of the Counter-Reformation. And the degrees are essentially, just because of time constraints, they're a vehicle to restore the Stuart pretenders back to the throne of England. The high degree known as the Royal Arch documents the recovery of what was lost. It's sort of the end of the story. You could see parallels with things like the quest for the Golden Fleece. In fact, that's actually mentioned in the ritual, where Solomon's temple has been destroyed and by the Babylonians. It's been sacked, and the Jews are in exile in Babylon, and this Babylonian emperor known as Cyrus the Great dispatches this Jewish governor named Zorobabel, whose name literally means the heart of Babylon, back to the Holy Land to build the second temple. This is the temple that Jesus storms in the New Testament, where they're sacrificing goats and things like that.
Yeah.
At any rate, when they're building the second temple, when they're clearing the rubble and this, that, and the other, they find a trap door in the ground, and they spring it. And they find this subterranean treasure vault down there. And lo and behold, there's the sacred name of God, the Tetragrammaton. And, you know, this is what has been lost in the Blue Lodge. This is the end of the story. The Freemason has discovered what was lost. The high degrees are incredibly important, especially in the context of the United States, because of what they're associated with, France and the Jesuits. The high degrees never pick up. They never take off in England. I mean, you know, who is the mortal enemy of the English, the yeah. French and the Jesuits?
Yeah.
But it becomes very popular in the United States because France was our main ally during the Revolution.
Yes.
And it's vastly important because it's this model of the loss of the word and the recovery of it that the United States is modeled around, is fashioned around. This isn't the case in England. In England, basically, you have degrees 1, 2, and 3, and that's it. In America, you have this fusion of the Blue Lodge degrees 1, 2, and 3, but these high degree rituals, which become incredibly popular in the United States, and it's you know, model, especially the only word I can use to describe it, that the United States really sort of creates itself out of, with the founders being, you know, Freemasons. They're using the Blue Lodge philosophies and rituals, but they are also tapping the high degrees, mainly this Royal Arch of Enoch ceremonial, to fashion the country around. And I'll just add on this, I know you have some questions. It is really this nexus between the Freemasons and the Jesuits that, for lack of a better word, Chris, has really essentially spawned every conspiracy theory out there, even to this day. It spawned the Illuminati, you know, the Kennedy assassination, 9/11. It all comes out of this nexus between the Society of Jesus and the Freemasons.
Absolutely. And there was another part here in your book from up around page 154 that talks about, let's see, where is it here? Enoch distinguishes itself from other holy scripture in that it is written in the first person. The second book of Enoch to Enoch is often called the Slavonic Enoch, discovered in 1886, and it contains a section entitled The Exaltation of Melchizedek, which outlines the priestly succession of Melchizedek as the inheritor of Enoch's secrets. Now, I myself, as I said, not only a fourth degree Knight of Columbus, but also studied as a Roman Catholic seminarian my first year in college. And morning prayer and mass, regularly, we read from, and I want to say it's Ezekiel, where they talk about the line of the orders of order of the priests of Melchizedek of old, and the knowledge being passed down. And I find it really interesting that the Royal Arch of Enoch follows the same succession of the priests of Melchizedek. And
absolutely. And, yeah, absolutely.
And the fact that you're talking about the Jesuits and the confluence of those two things, once again, the order of Melchizedek coming together with the order of Melchizedek. Really, really interesting stuff there. And like you said, could be the birth of who knows how many nefarious plots in the world, as far as conspiracy theories go.
Yeah, I mean, and again, you know, what you're talking about. Yeah, of course. You know, and again, this was the thrust, the thesis of the main book. And, you know, why is the name Enoch in there? And again, this is sort of like, you know, another, you know, reason that I wrote the book is not only is the Enochic literature, you know, I mean, you have the order of Melchizedek in the high degrees. It's like a subbody, an auxiliary body related to the Royal Arch. The thrust of the book, the thesis was not only to document the critical nature, the importance of the Enochic material within Freemasonry, the Royal Arch, but it was also to present this historical anomaly, which is, you know, not only is the Masonic symbolism, both coming out of the Blue Lodge and the High Degrees, critical to understanding the founding of the United States, but it's an anomaly, and that is that. This you know, again, is something that's just fascinating and just, again, points right towards the Jesuits, is that the ritual, the Royal Arch of Ritual is contains, displays, whatever word you want to use, elements of the Lost Book of Enoch, One Enoch. And, of course, One Enoch was lost to history. You know, it disappears from the history pages from around the 2nd, 3rd century. It doesn't turn up. Until the late 1700s, when a guy named James Bruce returns from Ethiopia with copies of it, and he comes back with three copies. One, I think, goes to the Sorbonne in Paris. He keeps one, and then the main one, it goes to the Bodleian Library at Oxford University, and that's not even translated until, I believe, 1821. But the high degree ceremonial is containing elements of the Lost Book of Enoch, of One Enoch. The ritual's named after him, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because then that poses another question where if the high degree ceremonial is, you know, has elements of One Enoch in it, well, where's the copy? You know, who has it? And there's, you know, some interesting explanations as to where this could have come from. You could look at anything from a secret, you know, Vatican library, perhaps. You could turn to the world of John Dee. That's really an interesting story with Dee.
Yeah.
And the Lost Book of Enoch with Sir Walter Riley. And another guy you can look at is Guillaume Postel, who is sort of D's equivalent on the continent, yeah, only without the angelic magic. He was a Jesuit sympathizer, and he actually met with this mysterious Ethiopian priest who visited him, who allegedly came with a copy of the Book of Enoch. Could this have been the same copy that Bruce returned to later on? So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story, and it's certainly an interesting anomaly. And then when you get into the whole history of the United States, you know, it even becomes that much more fascinating.
Well, and especially when you're talking about the connection with John Dee, the connection specifically with Enochian magic, the fact that really, as far as biblically or even close biblically, the only two people that ever really had, like, I guess, full power of call and control granted to them over demons, jinn, spirits were Enoch and Solomon. They had angels directly at their charge and the power with which to wield them. When you're talking about that power, you know, much like we were discussing last week, the whole point of the Ark of the Covenant was direct communication with the divine. And even being in the presence of the divine, you had to be of a certain mindset. You had to be of a certain place spiritually, or else you would be struck down. So
I mean I could give you an example of this, and it ties into you know just with what you're talking about, and even ties into pop culture. You know, and when you get into the Ark of the Covenant, you know, this is we talked about in the Royal Arch Ceremonial in the York Rite, which is the second, you know, the two main high degree bodies in the United States are the Scottish Rite and the York Rite. They're both pretty much based on this thing that, like I said, comes out of Paris, France, called the Rite of Perfection. This is what the Jesuits create as this counter-reformation subterfuge. In the York Rite ritual, the Tetragrammaton is located on top of the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, this is the same Ark of the Covenant that can contain the Ten Commandments and you know, Moses's rod and things like that. And if you're familiar with Hebrew lore, this was always, I thought, kind of interesting. And again, I'm going to go into pop culture a little bit here. If you know, and this ties into what you were saying with King Solomon, with the mastery over demons and things like that. There, in the Lesser Key of Solomon, there are 72 demons that Solomon commanded. And of course, the word that Moses uses to part the Red Sea is Shem Hamphorash, which was constructed of 72 Hebrew letter groups. And of course, you know, this is how Moses left Egypt, crossing the, you know, parting the Red Sea with this secret word and the 72 letter groups. If you ever watch the movie, and this ties into Raiders of the Lost Ark, the first Indiana Jones movie, if you ever seen that, you'll remember the scene where they're talking about trying to find the Ark of the Covenant in the Well of Souls. Yeah. And it's the staff of Ra. And he says, they're with the little old man. He says, and they got the headpiece. Remember, they got it off the Nazi's hand, his burnt hand. And they said, how tall is it? And he says, 6 kadam height. And he says, 72 inches.
Yeah.
72. And again, this is a nexus.
And then minus 1 kadam.
That's right.
For the Hebrew God whose ark it is. I'm actively holding the headpiece of Ra in my hand right now.
You got to take back 1 kadam to honor the demiurgic creator whose ark it belongs to. But no, there was the number 72 again. So you see how this stuff, you know, weaves in and out of popular culture also. But it's it's an interesting story, you know, because it does link together, you know, the Masonic rituals. I mean, you know, it does tie into Judaism and Christianity and Islam and all that good stuff.
And even the fact, like you said, that the Royal Arch is the 13th degree by all degree standard, even though it's the highest one, it's really down there. That is directly in line with the symbolism of Christ and the 12 apostles, Christ being the 13th, being the Son, being the one that is revealing the truth. Same thing in the Arch of Enoch. You would also be looking at the concept of the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life,
of course,
at that point, which once again, whenever you look at the rite of the Arch, let's go ahead and start getting into, if you can get into some of that, because I know there's some things that you can't really get into, and I fully respect that.
I understand. I can get into this. You know, the only thing I don't really can't talk about is like the passwords and hand signs and stuff
absolutely
like that.
Absolutely.
But
the symbolism, especially like they were talking about in Oak Island and the pit that was dug and the 12 levels that are there, and the shaft of light of the revelation of truth. It's beautiful and amazing. Yes, absolute tree of knowledge, Kabbalistic symbolism.
Sure. sure. Yeah, I could absolutely talk to this. When you recover the name of God in this 13th degree, it's a form of apotheosis. The candidate becomes godlike. And of course, it's in Kabbalah, this is what's known as the Shekinah, or the Shekinah, the divine presence. And of course, it's the 13th degree. You just want to look at this, whether it's a coincidence or not, you don't go into a revolution until you have 13 colonies. The Great Seal is plastered with the number 13. In the Scottish Rite, there are 32 degrees. The Kabbalistic Tree of Life contains 10 sephirah and 22 paths. Add 10 plus 22 and you get 32. Yep. This is why there are 32 degrees in the Scottish Rite. If you add the hidden sephirah in Kabbalah, which is called Das, which is a combination of the others, you have 33. And again, this is the 33 degrees in the Scottish Rite. The whole idea, there's overlap with this in Judaism. It starts with Judaism. It's Kabbalah with a K. There's overlap with this in Christianity, where it's called the celestial hierarchies. And then it's in Islam, where it's called the dignities of God, where these super celestial spheres are not only divine attributes, but their levels of spiritual purification, that as the soul ascends beyond the celestial, there's three worlds: the mundane world, which we're in, there's the celestial, and then there's the super celestial. The Kabbalistic tree is in the super celestial spheres. When the body perishes and the soul is ascending, it has to pass through these different levels of super, of spiritual purification. And in a nutshell, what some writers like Aleister Crowley hypothesized was that the Scottish Rite enabled the soul, because when the candidate went through these degrees, it enabled the soul to progress through these spheres more easily than other people. Essentially, this echoes like Giordano Bruno and John Dee, that it's the magus who ascends through these spheres. You'll find all sorts of symbolism with this stuff.
Quite literally, the path of the alchemist. I became obsessed at the beginning of COVID with reading old school alchemical documents, and quite literally, that is what they were doing. Their science and their notes, and their experiments were utterly an attempt to purify themselves, because the more pure they were, the more pure the experiment was, and the more pure the outcome. Really, really interesting concept to consider in that right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you're dealing with the medieval alchemists, you're dealing with Gnosticism. Yeah. They're basing their ideas on the old Gnostics, to know those who know. And again, when you look at Kabbalah and Christianity and Islam, you'll find the same thing in Gnosticism. It's the hermetic spheres. There's seven of them. And these spheres of spiritual purification, they're not only that, but they're also divine attributes of deity. They're all, people like Raymond Lully and call them, mini tetragrammatons, things like that. Yeah. And, the Gnostic, the medieval alchemists reflect the Gnostics. And again, all this overlaps with Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And it's interesting, because you'll find a lot of symbolism, relating to Kabbalah, not only in Freemasonry, but you'll find it in just, everyday life. For instance, in Kabbalah, you have the 32 in the Christianity. In Christianity, there's called the celestial hierarchies. These are the super celestial realms, and there's nine of them. Of course, this is where you have in Dante Alighieri, the nine levels of hell, the nine levels of heaven. You have the Johnny Depp movie, The Ninth Gate, same sort of thing. You will find the Kabbalistic symbolism.
Yeah.
I mean, you'll find it in religion. In the Orthodox religions, you'll find Kabbalistic imagery and symbolism.
Yeah, and nine being specifically numerologically a number of power, three being, a number of strength, nine being three threes, all kinds of things that literally date back straight to Kabbalah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and it's really interesting even to see numerologically, everything, how many things trace their root right back to that one stem. I love the truths of Masonry because that's what it's about, is shedding the light on that. Now, once again, that's it. You can go through all kinds of conspiracies, folks. You could say that I'll say it right now. You know, the Knights of Columbus give so much money to handicapped charities because they want to make themselves look good. Like, you could say all kinds of things. Doesn't make it true. They are a society of seekers and people that are honestly there to find the truths in themselves and to finish their own pyramid, quite literally.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, like I said, when you join Masonry, certain barbecues and bingo night are part of it, but you know, and a lot of Masons go through it and they don't really understand the rituals that they're looking at it,
yeah,
you know, or that they're going through. It's really, I mean, I went through it and I didn't really know. I mean, most don't. It's after you go through it, if you have the inclination, as I did, to start reading the people, you know, the great Masonic scholars like, you know, Albert Pike, Manly P. Hall, that's when you'll start putting this stuff together and, you know, can really determine and discover, you know, really how deep the rabbit hole goes. You just find this stuff, you know, all over the place. I mean, not only the Masonic symbolism, but, it's just a fascinating deep study to me. And like I said, I wrote the one book on it, you know, The Royal Arch, which I'm in the process of doing some edits to. But, it's just a fascinating topic. I think I like it so much because it covers so many different other areas. I mean, you have philosophy, you have politics, you have symbolism, you have the occult, you have religion. You have the mystical traditions like, you know, Gnosticism, alchemy, Rosicrucianism, you know, all that, you know, Kabbalah, all that's in there.
Well, and, you know, to prime example of what you're talking about, right? Just to put all of those things in one pot of gumbo as a Cajun here, page 463, you actually go into the Basilica in Baltimore and the Capitol in the District of Columbia. Both Washington monuments were designed by Freemason architect Robert Mills. His placement of monuments to a Masonic president before domed buildings is indicative of Masonic solar rulership and invested George Washington as the sublime Enochian Magus of the new Masonic Republic. Like, that is a fantastic, fantastic description of quite literally what these high-ranking Masons saw. We were in the middle of the moments of enlightenment in the French Enlightenment period. Our government was so based off of the French concept of democracy and so influenced by that period. Even Benjamin Franklin himself being the envoy to France, absolutely amazing to see that. And like you covered, seeing George Washington as that new Enochian priest in the Temple of Enoch, which is now America.
Right. Well, I mean, it's, you know, you have, it's the same cast of characters. The guy who did the Baltimore Basilica and the Capitol, and they're both domed, that's the chamber of the sun god Apollo, is Benjamin Henry Latrobe. And then you had the two Washington monuments, the one in Baltimore, which is a replication of Trajan's Column, the famous military general.
Yep.
That's, of course, why it's for Washington, is actually predates the obelisk in the federal district. And, of course, you have the better than that, it's the cover of the book. After Washington died, a Mason named Simon Chaudron compared Washington to Enoch. And then you have the engraving by Barillet, where it's on the cover of the book where Washington is being taken out of his coffin, you know, in corporeal form, being hoisted up to heaven. And you got Saturn, Kronos on there and all that good stuff. And you have the two jewels hanging over the tomb. One is the Masonic Past Master and the other is the Order of Cincinnati. Washington was in both of them. I mean, he was pretty much the de facto founder of the Order of Cincinnati. So yeah, I mean, you know, from again, it's from start to finish. When you know, you can look at the architecture, that's one thing. I mean, you can look at the founding documents. I mean, the United States Constitution, the separation of powers, the triple division of government, that comes straight out of the Masonic Blue Lodge, where the power is triple divided. That's, of course, based on the movement of the sun, you know, or the ecliptic, I guess is the better word. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you have the, you know, the architecture, the founding documents, the seals, the logo, it all goes back to Blue Lodge and high degree Freemasonry.
And you break it all down so entirely well. I mean, I chewed through the first half of this book before I even realized it over the last few days. And I cannot wait to have you on to talk about this same symbolism in popular cinema, popular movies, things like that. And of course, you know, it could once again go into conspiracy theories all day about Illuminati triangles at the Super Bowl. I know even there were even people that went off on Illuminati kicks on the horrible, horrible incident that happened in my hometown of Houston at Astroworld. It's really interesting to see how symbolism can go awry. And I guess as we kind of wrap our time with you here in the last 15 minutes or so of your hour, let's get into the popular symbols that people see, the regular things that people see, things like the unfinished pyramid, the all-seeing eye. These are things that are somewhat ubiquitous, not just within Freemasonry, but throughout esoteric teachings, all kinds of things. And I guess because some of them cross over, yes, into occult esoteric teachings as well. Even the Star of David does, you know?
You're correct. I mean, if again, when you're looking at the symbolism of this stuff, and this is the thing that I stress over and over and over and over again, and whether it be in popular culture or media or, you know, within Masonry, and if it's Masonry, you know, how's it being used? Is pay attention to the context of it. What's the surrounding circumstance? Because that's critical to understanding this.
Yeah, what is the story being woven with it and the lesson being woven with it?
Well, the problem is there's no one answer to that. Because it depends. It depends on how it's being used and the context or the surrounding circumstance is how it's being, you know, how it's being presented. You know, when you come to understand it, you know, and like I said, it just depends on this, that, and the other, how it's being used, the context. I mean, you know, you'll have a greater understanding if you read the book and you understand the Masonic lore, you know, why Hermes is always, you know, being used by libraries. You see Hermes always hanging around libraries. You know, why is the number 47 always turning up in popular culture where there's some secret or something like that, or the number 13? You'll find this over and over again in the National Treasure movies. You know, and again, if you get into, you know, if you get into just, you know, some of the symbolism, like I said, you know, the most important symbol within Freemasonry is the sun. So we're constantly dealing with solar symbolism, the domed building, the obelisk, you know, the in the federal district, you have the 47th proposition of Euclid, right there, you know, which, you know, from the, you know, which is the Pythagorean triangle, A squared plus B squared always equals C squared. And again, if you're familiar with Rosicrucian philosophy, this is, you know, Osiris, you know, Isis, and their perfected solar child, Horus. You know, it's formed in the federal district between the White House down to the monument, Washington Monument, the obelisk, up the mall to the Capitol, and then the hypotenuse, this would be C squared, is Pennsylvania Avenue. Well, why is it called Pennsylvania Avenue? Well, that's the Keystone State. Well, you know, what's a keystone? Well, that creates a royal archway. That creates an arch.
That's right.
You know, that's part of all this. It's a symbol of perfection. It's a symbol of spiritual purification. It's the notion of recovery of the Tetragrammaton, the Shekinah, as it were. So, you know, the one thing that the book really tries to do, and I hope I've done this, and you know, like I said, I'm going back and making some edits, so I'll make sure I do this, is when you're looking at the symbolism, whether it be Masonic or otherwise, you know, whether it be alchemical or Gnostic or Kabbalistic, you know, always try to understand it in the context that it's in. And I guess this comes from my training as being a lawyer, because you know, it's kind of what they teach at law school, is just because somebody shoots somebody doesn't make it first degree murder.
That's right.
I mean, it could be first degree, second degree, third degree. It could be manslaughter. It could even be self-defense.
Yeah.
That's the parallel I'm kind of trying to draw, is always try to pay attention to the surrounding circumstance of how the information is being presented.
That's right. And not only that, because, yeah, you got to be careful, not to weave a narrative with it. And you got to be, let the evidence take you where the evidence takes you. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you can weave a narrative with it, but you got to make sure it's the correct one, because you know, I mean, that's where you could fall into a bit of a trap, because if you don't understand the correct context of how it's being presented, you could, you know, misinterpret it. Because I mean, I can't tell you how many times, you know, especially this is true with the movies, you know, a symbol in one movie, it means something esoteric, but in another movie, it could mean something esoteric also, but just have a slightly, you know, off kilter meaning or a little different. And again, you got to look at how it's being presented.
Well, and like I say on the show all the time, yes, we have conspiracy theorists all over. They're professional ones. They're called district attorneys. Their job is to, yes, weave a story with the evidence at hand and weave a narrative. And if the jury bites and goes with it, then those are the charges at hand. You know, it can be easily done. Things can be easily misconstrued. How often do you see symbols being used, specifically Masonic symbolism and that esoteric symbolism being used for nefarious purposes in media, stuff like that? Because I definitely want to have you back on to discuss your whole series of books, cinema symbolism, all that kind of stuff, because I'm a huge subliminal cinema fan. The Exorcist is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Oh, that's got all kind of stuff going on.
Oh, absolutely. From subliminal audio and video to esoteric messages, all kinds of things. And I definitely want to have you on about that, but there is a beautiful symbology to the rites of Masonry. And how often do you see that being subverted for nefarious use or for, I guess, conspiratorial use?
Right. I don't know if it's necessarily Masonic per se. And the one thing I do with my books is I present the information. I don't really... As a lawyer, and I guess this is just I present the information object, you know, from an objective standpoint.
Yes.
I don't get, you know, I leave it to the reader if they want to think it's evil or good or whatever. I mean, I can kind of argue it both ways. Some of the stuff that is very interesting to me, and I'm going to do a whole chapter on this in the next book, is the 9/11 imagery that turns up in pop culture right before the event.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That is really strange. And I started working on this, and as I'm doing it, I kind of, you know, come to the conclusion that probably just doing a laundry list of it isn't really it doesn't really work. What you have to do is sort of weave in some of the, you know, more, you know, some of the conspiracy with it, and then some of the numbers, some of the numerology going on with 9/11. You know, and even, believe it or not, I mean, with some of this stuff, you have Aleister Crowley lurking in the background. You have things related to the old age of Pisces, the new age of Aquarius. This is what Crowley talked about with the new age of Taurus. I mean, you got the number 93. You know, you got Flight 93, which is fascinating.
The massive spike in the egg experiment that was going on. I don't know if you remember the MIT egg experiment, but it was kind of along the lines of like the SETI project, where you could like use part of your computer to like in its downtime process information for SETI. except it was kind of using people's computers and bandwidth at the beginning of the internet to create these large random number generators. And the day before 9/11 happened, all these random number generators just spiked in the same way globally before it happened.
I don't know anything about that, but I mean, it's just weird that,
really, really interesting, just phenomenological circumstance.
I could throw you one 10 times better than that.
Okay.
The Pentagon.
Don't ruin your book now, but please.
No. Well, the Pentagon, the ground was broken on 9/11, 1941, 50 days beforehand. The Pentagon is 77,000 square feet, 77 feet tall, hit by Flight 77. I mean, come on.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Does this begin to sound like a computer simulation? I mean, it's weird.
Yeah, absolutely. The more than coinky dink almost.
Yeah.
It's really strange stuff. And I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. I want to thank you so much for your voluminous amount of work and research and in getting these things out to people and in explaining the actual symbology behind these things. Because, I would love to have you on more just to talk about Masonic tradition, Masonic teaching, because it really is that that path of the seeker. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. So I want to thank you for bringing the truth of the Royal Arch of Enoch out to people, as well as your amazing work, Cinema Symbolism. Tell everybody where they can go to find you, to find your work, to order the books, to contact you. Like I told you before the show, it's now time for shameless self-promotion.
Sure. Well, first off, let me say thank you, Chris, for having me on Curious Realm Podcast. It was my pleasure to be here tonight. It was an excellent show. I definitely look forward to returning. We'll do a show on the movies. That's no problem. Certainly, I don't want to cannibalize your show. We'll do something over the summer or in the fall. No doubt. But we'll definitely do a show on the movies. And, of course, Freemasonry is one of my all-time favorite subjects. So, of course, we can always continue the conversation on that. That's no problem whatsoever. My website, the easiest way to find me is my website. It's my name. My name is Robert W. Sullivan IV, and that's literally my website. It's Robert W. Sullivan, and then for the fourth, it's the letter I, the letter V for the Roman numerals, .com, Robert W. Sullivan, IV.com. There are links on my website to purchase the books. They're on all the major online retailers, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. You can get them on the Kindle copy if you want, the ebook, or if you want the print edition, that's fine also. That's all available. There's links to buy the books on my website. If you go to my website, there's information about me. There's information about upcoming shows I'm doing, such as this one. There's a blog where I'm constantly updating with shows, appearances, archive material. When this is archived, I'll put that on my website. There's a contact page. It's a very, very easy site to navigate. RobertWSullivanIV.com. Links to buy the books. Again, one more time, RobertWSullivanIV.com. And again, thank you, Chris, for having me on. My pleasure.
Absolutely. It was more than a pleasure having you on this evening. Your wealth of knowledge about one of the most amazing topics I can think of, Masonry, the symbolism behind it, the symbolism in the world around us, should we choose to find it and look at it. Thank you so much again for your wealth of information, your years of research into these topics, and your openness to come on and talk about them. I cannot wait to have you back on the show. Take care of yourself, Robert. I will definitely be in touch. I'll send links and everything else. Take care and have a great evening.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, Chris, and have a great night. And yes, we'll definitely do this again, no doubt.
Absolutely. Man, what an amazing conversation, folks. Make sure to stop on by his website, RobertWSullivanIV.com. And while you're online, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. CuriousRealm.com/live is where you can find everything. We will be back with our second guest, Dr. K. Kimberly McGeorge talking about remote viewing, how to remote view, what remote viewing is. Do you only have to follow the military form of remote viewing? Is there a military form of remote viewing? We will be getting into that and more with our guest and sponsor, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, right after this. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the Internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Welcome back to this second part of episode 19. Wow, it doesn't really seem like we are 19 episodes in already, and well over 30 hours of content. Thank you so much to everyone who listens. Thank you so much to everyone who supports the show, as well as our sponsors who we just came in from break from, as well as our special live streaming sponsor, WebWorks Wireless. WebWorksWireless.com is where you can go to find all of the fantastic stuff from WebWorks Wireless. They provide live streaming. They provide internet for your home, camp, all kinds of things. Stop on by, check them out. Truly unlimited wireless packages. WebWorksWireless.com is the website that you want to go to. And while you are online checking that out, please do make sure to stop on by and check out the amazing website of our latest sponsor, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge, our guest. The Secret of Everything, secretofeverything.com is the website. Tonight, our topic with the amazing Dr. Kimberly McGeorge is remote viewing. What is remote viewing? Why did our government look into it? Can anybody remote view? Welcome to the show once again, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm wonderful. Thank you so much.
I have been excited to do a show about remote viewing. Well, probably since we ventured down the aisles of topics like this as our previous incarnation. And we have a lot of things in our knowledge vault, including the declassified documents from Project Stargate. Not a lot of people realize that our government spent millions upon millions of dollars for decades studying the art of remote viewing and the actual science of remote viewing. The fact that, yeah, it seems like just about anybody has this ability to be able to remote view, to be able to travel beyond and see things. So real quick, let's start getting into what remote viewing is and how people can do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I have a more comprehensive view probably of remote viewing than some people. I think we do it a little bit of a disservice by calling it remote viewing because people kind of have that fixed idea that, you know, you can look at anything, go across the planet, you know, bop in somebody's house, you know, kind of see what's going on or look at a murder site or, you know, there's a lot of different applications or look at the lottery numbers or, you know, find hidden treasure, find a lost item, you know, or missing person, on. And all that is true. But I think that term remote viewing is so restrictive because what you're talking about, Project Stargate and all, you know, even though they kept it kind of top secret, yada, yada, that's still the above budget operations of the military and the government. So that's not the black ops budget where this stuff is just accepted as absolutely effing normal. And why is it normal? You know, because as I call people, anyone with a spirit in them, because not everybody has a spirit in them, prior creation spirits, you know, we come from the all. So what can't we do? We can read minds. We can merge with all energies. So remote viewing to me, there's a million ways to remote view. So most people, when you say the term, and I think you would agree with this, when you say the term remote viewing, most people think about the coordinate military type of style remote viewing, where we have a blind, you know, coordinate, and then we draw or, you know, different ways the information comes in, but we present the information and then compare it to a target, yada, yada. But there's a lot of other ways. To me, out-of-body OBEs is a form of remote viewing. If you go out of your body or you project part of your consciousness, which is how I remote view, out of your body, That's remote viewing. You know, I can go right now and be talking to you and walk around my daughter's houses, all four of them at the same time. So we also call that bilocating, trilocating, quadrant, you know, on and on.
Yeah.
You know, locating, that's part of remote viewing to me. Merging, if I can merge with you and become you and look out through your eyes and be you, is that not remote viewing? So there's a lot of types of remote viewing that are unknown or we don't consider. And a lot of people do have these abilities that I'm speaking of. Some people very easily, as a matter of fact, when I do scans, one of the most common things they find is nobody's in their body. Where are they? They're remote viewing. Wherever they are, whether they're creating it out of imagination, which of course here in the game, everything you can imagine is real, they're still remote viewing. Maybe they're thinking about a past relationship. Maybe they're thinking about a future vacation. You know, maybe they're dreaming of how they're going to spend their bonus check, but that's all remote viewing.
Absolutely. I mean, even the process of daydreaming and not physically being there is a form of remote viewing. And I, you know, we've talked about my son on this show before, Doctor, and his akin to my brain. And I have to tell him all the time, I know you're deep inside your brain right now.
I love it.
But there's everything going on out here, too. And we need you out here, buddy. And it's so
I love
easy.
It. Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, I mean, you know, I've got a little bit of, I've got a touch of the ADD, ADHD, and it's one of those, I can see the propensities in him. So to be able to give him those coping mechanisms early, to be able to let him know, hey, it's okay that your brain works this way, kid. It's all right. You just need to learn to focus it. And I think that's a big part of what we're talking about here is that, yes, everybody, it's like saying everybody can't meditate. Yeah, you can. It's just that what it takes for me to meditate is different than what it takes for you to meditate. It may take me 15 minutes longer to shut down my quote monkey brain, you know, of, oh, is the laundry still going? Oh, did I do the dishes? Whatever it is that distracts your mind from the task at hand, be it putting your shoes on and getting ready for school, relaxing and meditating, or focusing on an object inside of an envelope that you've never seen.
Yeah, that's a great point. One of the things, you know, when I teach meditation, which I don't teach formal meditation. I teach informal meditation because really what we need to get, and the Buddhists will tell you the same thing, the Tibetans, a lot of the Eastern cultures and religions will tell you the same thing. What you need to get to a point to truly meditate is exactly what you said. I call it silent mind, quiet mind, still mind, you know. We need to get to a point where you're not thinking about anything because only then when you have no thoughts, and a lot of people have, you know, projected thoughts. You know, a lot of people don't know this. I think I might have mentioned it before, but every single one of the cell phone towers has a switch that can become a programming tower, and they actually transmit the frequency of thoughts. So we're all under not only the collective consciousness of non-locality, so we all can actually hear everyone's thoughts if we choose to, or we tune into that frequency of that person and their thoughts. They're like whipping by us. Just like everyone's always, you know, I want more money, I want more money, I want more money. But, you know, I mean, it's whipping by you in computer transmissions all day. Just reach out and grab some, like, hold your hand out and receive it. Like, it's not hard to receive money. And that's a whole nother conversation. But it kind of, you know, all ties into absolutely, you know, in my opinion, the same thing.
Well, and...
But, you know, silent mind. Excellent point.
Yeah. It's about finding that space and... Remote viewing specifically, I've been going through the document released, the declassified document. And like you said, what is declassified here and what we know about Project Stargate is just what has been put out on the up and up. It's just it's what we know about that's been able to be declassified because, it's been 30 years since the research, all kinds of things. It does not mean that. A form of Project Stargate does not still exist. It does not mean that these means are not still used by the alphabet agencies of not just our government, but foreign governments. All of this started, at least our research, as a response to finding out that Russia was not only researching it, but actively having success. And it's really interesting to see the deep dive that our government took into researching this and into actively verifying it.
Again, to you, every single government in the world, every single three-letter agency in the world, including, you know, other agencies that don't have three letters, like Mossad, they all have very, very, very high-level remote viewers, and they use them for many, many different projects. So, I mean, that's ongoing. A lot of times, speaking of remote viewing or viewing, a lot of times I'll catch remote viewers in my house. So, and they have a certain frequency, you know, that they're projecting, that they're not actually standing there, that they didn't, you know, send out, you know, a part of their body and or appear or, you know, locate, but they're, you know, projecting a part of their consciousness to view a certain situation, you know, for a certain agency or for a certain project, or they've been hired to monitor. So there's a lot to remote viewing, and you can actually view many different things. You know, at the same time, you can also view past, you can also view future, because all time is now.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of people don't realize is the exact kinship to astral projection.
Yeah.
And like you said, the idea that you can feel the presence of a remote viewer. You can tell when somebody is remote viewing your location. And that now, of course, that gets into our typical course of conversation that we have with you, Doctor, which is frequencies, strange right. frequencies, things like that. Being able to literally same way as finding a sideband in a radio signal and going, oh, wow, listen to that. I can hear part of Australia while I'm listening to the news from San Antonio because of the storm. Same thing happens with data in our brains and even the transmission path of our thoughts. How easy is it for someone to remote view literally what's inside of our brain? I guess what would be the equivalent of telepathy?
Kind of. I mean, the way I always did it, which I don't do as much now because I have, of course, my lovely technology, and I've had it for a number of years, even in a different form. But I mean, I used to just merge with a person. So once I merge with a person, I can choose where to direct my attention. I can direct my attention to their thoughts or their emotions, or literally I can crawl around their body and be like, oh, wow, you know, in the brain, there's some deep, dippy channels. This is an addict. And then I can go deeper and say, this is a drug addict. This is a sex addict. It has a different feel. It has a different frequency. But all sex addicts have the same frequency. So even though sexual addiction and alcohol addiction are two different frequencies, every brain feels exactly the same when you're in it. So when you're merged with it, when you're crawling around in that body, it's just consistent, you know. And of course, you know, people will say, well, there's light sexual addiction, and then, you know, then there's like perversion sexual addiction, or there's light, you know, alcoholism, and then there's like, you know, heavy, you know, alcoholism. Yeah, yeah, and of course,
yeah.
Yeah, there's, but I mean, again, it's in the same frequency range, you know, and you can also see by how deep the divots are, how low the brain chemicals are. So there's a lot of information you can put together. And really, you know, everybody holds up psychics and remote viewers and all these things. But again, I'm going to say 100% of everyone has all these abilities. And again, it's so funny. We come down to this lower density, the 3D density that's so physical. And then we just want to go back out, and we want to go up to the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. And you'll get your opportunity when you pass. Like, you can choose to come back here, or you can choose to move on to a different density and get your abilities back. But it doesn't mean we've lost the abilities. I think the problem is we don't remember who we are. Once you know who you are, you understand this reality. A lot of your memory, it's like this echo memory that you hold in your field that they block with memory wiping technology and all sorts of technology all the time to hold us down. You know, it begins to come back, and then you can operate outside this reality. Then you can start creating your life that you want. I had a guy write me and say, I want to win the lottery. Well, just tapping him without even technology, I'm like, your money beliefs are insane. If you think you have to win the lottery to win money, I mean, your money beliefs are wrong. So, I mean, you can create anything you want within this reality, you just have to understand, first of all, the nature of this reality. Then you have to remember who you are.
Well, and the exact modality in which you live, you know, like you said, you don't have to win the lottery to end your money woes. I think your focus is a little beyond.
Right.
And if you narrow and whittle that focus down to the difference between needs and wants, your needs can easily be cared for.
Absolutely. And then it also, obviously, with that question, we also know what else about him? We also know that he believes that money buys happiness. And I'm here to tell you, I have made, at times in my life, I have made tons more money than I'm making now. And I've been miserable because money doesn't buy happiness. Money doesn't buy health. Money doesn't buy good relationships. You think it does? It absolutely does not. It doesn't buy so much of what is really what we're seeking deep in our soul.
Yeah. And, you know, just to loop back for a second, just a moment ago, quite literally, as you said, remote viewing is voluntary. I started scrolling past the page that said remote viewing is voluntary. I'm not even joking. It was weird. Or was it? Now, the reason I want to get into that real quick, because as you know, we have quite a bit of our audience that are TIs, targeted individuals, things like that. These are people that have been targeted by technologies. And I guess part of the question that I would have to ask, because of course, like we were saying, remote viewing can very easily be sensed, felt. If you are attuned to that, if you're attuned to remote viewing and know how to do it. Now, the question is, whenever you say that you remote view into people, I assume the fact that, number one, yes, that has to be voluntary and at their will, that you can't just remote view like into the old lady shopping for grapes across the aisle, right?
No, you're wrong. No, I can merge with anyone, anything, any place, any tree, any animal, willing or unwilling. Very few people have the ability to have a psychic defense up against me because they don't even see me coming.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's part of what I would want to get into here real quick, and why I was asking the question is, what is the possibility? Because, of course, when you're talking about spy tech, when you're talking about, here's this random building at these coordinates, what's inside? Amazing for intelligence. But when you're talking about the opportunity to literally hide inside of somebody, observe their surroundings, affect their surroundings through them, and even affect their health or well-being. Man, that's an amazing weaponization of something that is utterly naturally occurring.
Well, and in higher dimensions, in the upper ET races, and I'm not talking 5D, I hate to tell you guys, 5D is still a lower dimension, and it's considered that way throughout all of the multiverse. It's still considered a physical lower dimension. You have to get above 5D. But starting in about 5D, 6D, and above, everyone above, they don't talk as much as we do because they remain half merged, literally half merged, half connected all the time. So you know if someone's going to be late for dinner, you know if somebody's out flying in a jet around the galaxy and, you know, they got caught up and they're going to be, 3 hours late. Like there's a merging because as we go up in the dimensions, we head back to the all, and the all is the all. We are all part of each other. If we're fire, creation, spirit, again, clones and empty vessels and empty tree. Not every animal has a spirit. Not every tree has a spirit. Not every person has a spirit. But if you do have a spirit, we all come from these same things. The only thing that differentiates us is point of view. But we all are all powerful, have all the abilities, have all knowledge, all time and all space, past, present, and future. So apply that to psychic abilities. You, for some reason, aren't remembering that for probably trillions of years, you did remote view, you did merge with people, you did have, as you said, telepathy. And I also think we attribute psychic abilities because the governments and the military hide so much advanced technology from us So most people don't know that every single pet they own is weaponized. Every single pet in your house has eye implants, 100%. So you don't even know that you have these sweet little fuzzy furry kissy dogs taking pictures of you while you're going to the bathroom, while you're naked, while you're getting dressed, while you're having sex, while you're picking your nose. Whatever you guys do that you think nobody sees, your light bulbs are weaponized, your fire alarms are weaponized. Why do you think they require it? Do you think the government cares about your safety? If you do, I have a lot of swampland in North Carolina. I will start telling you, they don't care about your safety. There's a reason they have these rules and co-building codes. You know, of course, it's to make money, but it's also to get their spy high-tech equipment into your homes.
Sure.
Sorry.
No, absolutely. And I mean, that's one of the things, because of course, once again, you can use frequency sweepers. You can use all kinds of things to find your devices, right. Things like that.
Absolutely.
But like you said, there's no, and like the document said, no real defense against remote viewing. Now,
there's not. There's no real defense against a high frequency being who remembers who they are and is in their full power. And I hate to say it. I mean, there's really no defense against me. I mean, as a matter of fact, today I'll give you an example of something that happened. I am a targeted individual. We've talked about it before. I'm a very heavily targeted, I wonder why, individual. And I have a left ear implant that's been identified. I've seen it. The doctors have seen it. We all play games and call it an anomalous thing, you know, that they don't know what it is. So I just play the game. Like, you know, they're not going to be honest with me. But they turned up my ear implant this afternoon. You know what I did? I followed the frequency of the being person. In this case, it's not always a person, but it was a person turning up my ear implant. And I'm not going to tell you what I did because it wasn't very nice. I immediately went into astral battle and started doing certain things to this person's family and this person's property. It took 2 seconds for them to turn off my ear implant that was squealing. So that's part of remote viewing too, following the frequency, being able to defend yourself against enemies, all kinds of enemies, whether they're in the third dimension, whether they're in the 12th dimension, whether they're the Galactic Federation, whether they're what you would consider a demon. It doesn't matter. If you are all powerful, you remember who you are, and you understand the game, you're golden.
Yeah. And that's just it. You know, it really is about knowing the technology helps you defend yourself against it.
That's true. Good point.
And really the only defense is a good offense. So learning to remote view, learning to even tap into what's inside of you and the potentials that you have. All these things are a muscle
Agreed.
Like anybody can be taught to prime example, I'm an audio engineer. There are literally tapes out there that you can go out and buy to teach you how to recognize frequencies by sound. By how to hear a tone and go, yep, that's 1.5K. And it will train your ear. It will train your brain, everything else. But you got to be ready for the fact that now you might be like me and hear somebody's car stereo three houses away through your wall.
Because you're sensitized.
You're sensitized. And my wife can hear none of that. I can hear like almost words out of songs through our wall and front window.
That's cool. You have like Spider-Man hearing.
It's great, but it can be pretty troublesome sometimes when you're trying to shut down the old monkey brain.
True.
You know? You got to learn to kind of like weigh the positives, negatives, and you got to learn the fact that, yes, when you sensitize yourself to something, don't forget you're sensitized to it.
That was such a brilliant point. I have to stop you. I don't think you know how brilliant that was. I'm going to also talk about how people are always like, I want to see like you do. I want to hear like you do. I want to know like you do. I want to experience the fourth dimension, the fifth dimension. And I say, do you? And they're like, yeah, teach me. I'm like, I make them sign disclaimers, because if you see the fourth dimension and fifth dimension fully, I'm telling you, the first time you do, you will wet your pants. Man, woman, big, little, child, you will wet, because it's terrifying. The fourth dimension is one of the darkest, the most terrifying dimensions, close to the third that there is. And so they're like, that's so cool. You can see people's little grandma and relatives and their, you know, husbands and wives and children and pets that have passed. Yeah, that's really cool. but I don't tell you. I don't draw. I don't describe, because you don't want to know the horror that I see, the evil beings that I see, that the bones chilling makes you want to like crawl under your bed stuff that walks around. I mean, it's not one sided. And that's why I hate the love. And I do. I hate the love in my community. It's not, no dimension is all bunnies and unicorns and love and rainbows, unless you're very close. You're in the 700th dimension, almost all the way back to the All. I have a friend who, this is her first time here in the game. And she came, as she remembers, as full memory, she came from being light, color, and sound with about four other beings. And they were just, love is actually a very low frequency, guys, believe it or not. There's much, much better and bigger things than the love that we know here, to put it that way. It's just a very poor word and understanding of upper dimensions, the densities. But she came from joy and bliss, let's say. And, you know, our language isn't good because we're not really supposed to be using language. But anyway, you know, she came from that. So there are places that are, you know, rainbow bunnies and unicorns, but they're very, very, very high. We come into, we want to experience the contrast. Some of us are bored of love and bliss. We want to get a little dirty. You know what I'm saying? That's why we came here.
Yeah. And, you know, with that in mind, because, of course, like we've said before, like we've said with Lindsay Sharman, with you, to know these things is great, but there also comes with the burden of knowledge, the responsibility of that knowledge and the application, and the fact that, yes, you know, knowing how to remote view means that you could do these things. Is it the most responsible use to be doing that? Is it the best use karmically to be doing that? You know, that whole Spider-Man, with great knowledge, with great power comes great responsibility. And such a true modicum that we have to truly, truly keep ourselves on top of in this day and age. But let's start getting into the process of remote viewing, because once again, there's the process that was used by the military, things like that, in their and the main reason was true experimentation. And the only way to do true experimentation is that blind experimentation of, here is an envelope with something in it. Tell me what it is. And you know, really doing that true placebo effect type of double blind study. That was a lot of the reason for the origin of that. Like you said, you don't necessarily need anything in a blind envelope to be able to remote view. That process isn't a necessity to the action.
Right. I mean, I actually encourage, one of the first exercises when I teach a more free-flowing style of remote viewing is, I encourage you to get with someone, like, you know, I know what my daughter's apartment or house looks like. I've been there, obviously. So, you know, I encourage them to do things with people they know, where they feel safe, where they won't feel foolish if they're wrong. A lot of how we block our abilities, and like you said, building that muscle, is we're afraid to be wrong. We're afraid to sound stupid. We're afraid to make mistakes.
Sure.
I'm telling you, every remote viewer, every psychic, every empath, every whatever you want to call them, has made mistakes, because you misinterpret. It's not even that you've made mistakes. You might not even have ever made a mistake, but you misinterpret information. You have to learn a lot about you and how information comes to you. Do I know it? Do I feel it? Do I hear it? Do I see it? There's different styles even of remote viewing. Even though we're using the word viewing, there's also smells. When you go into somebody's house and walk around, you might have a smell. A lot of times I know the spirits because I smell the perfume. I walked into my garage, I smelled men's cologne. Well, either there was a man wearing heavy cologne in there, or there's a spirit, you know, wearing heavy cologne in there, you know.
Like you said earlier, even viewing people and viewing situations, whenever you hop into the brain of an addict, like, it may be the fact that, like, addiction smells like wet dog to you.
Exactly.
But the one common thing with every addict that you hop into is, I always smell wet dog.
Exactly. Oh, that's so really.
You know?
Interesting.
So, I mean, I'm just
saying, like, you're reminding me of people that smell death. Some people smell death. I see death, Like, I see the shadow of death on people, but a lot of people smell death. I'm kind of glad, because I don't think death's probably so super pleasant just because it involves, like, the avatar decaying, you know?
But yes.
You're reminding me of that.
But,
yeah,
but you know, thinking of it in that concept where it's going to be activating different centers of your brain.
Yes. And we're individual. We all, our brain chemical as the tool, the avatar is the tool, as you say. You know, we have low dopamine, high dopamine, low serotonin, and high serotonin. You know, we are in inflammation with histamine. We're not in inflammation with histamine. All that makes a difference on our interpretation. And so, again, I encourage you to, you know, work with a family member or a good friend. And what I have them do is I have them hide something very distinctive, something like a, I don't know, like a purple elephant statue. And you say, okay, I'm going to hide. You start simple. You start with giving them more information. And you say, I'm going to hide the purple elephant statue. And then you're going to come over to my house, remote view, or remote view my house. I always go. I don't know. I just always go when I remote view, but you can remote view. You know, I'm going to remote view your house. You're going to tell me where I put this, you know, purple elephant statue. So you don't have to start out, you know, tell me what I hid, tell me what color, tell me where it is. You start simple because it builds confidence. And you're like, you hid it in the fireplace. And there's no way, like, you wouldn't really guess that. Like, who would guess that you'd hide it in the fireplace? So then it builds this tremendous, you're like so proud and you gain confidence. And so the next time, you know, you do that a couple more times. And once you're comfortable with that and you're like, right. Then you're like, well, tell me what color of the thing that I hid and where I hid it. So we don't approach it, you know, all or nothing, where we have these deep failures. We build on triumphant successes, and that gives you the courage. And even with being psychic and speaking what you know or what you hear, you know, psychically in the timelines for the future or the present or about somebody's life or body, I also encourage that you speak it. And again, start with a safe person, you know, that you feel safe with.
Yeah.
That if they're like, no, I don't have any green dresses in my house, and I don't know what you're talking about. Don't wear a green dress. I don't own a green dress. But you know what's interesting about that? Sometimes somebody will tell you, even when you're practicing, I don't own any green dresses. And then they're like, oh crap, I forgot. I put one in the giveaway box in the garage. Sometimes you're right, even when someone tells you you're wrong. It's so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even once again, those, I guess what you would call close hits, you know, not necessarily a hard hit where it's like, yep, I'm wearing one right now. But like, my mom came in with a green dress yesterday.
Exactly.
Things like that. And what is there necessarily a difference between, I guess, clairvoyance, clairaudience, and telekinesis and remote viewing? And I mean, of course, I would assume the fact that they are all akin. You know, that
honestly, if you're good at one, you can do them all. You can be good at all of them. And I would put forth the theory you're actually using all of them when you remote view. I would put forth that theory, and I would have to kind of, you know, talk to you and see how you work to kind of prove that. But it really feels like that, at least when I remote view. I use a little bit of all of that depending on the situation, you know, or some of it. And when we scan people, because I have a panel where there's like maybe 50 different types of psychic abilities, which we don't even know most of them, but there are like a lot of different that we aren't taught or know. But people are coming up like with 30. Like, I've never really had anyone test for less than 30. So how sad is that, that we have 30 psychic abilities and we're probably not even using partially more than one or two? I think it's really sad because we're just super, super, like, we get so caught up in the avatar and hung up in the avatar, we forget that we're infinite spirit. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, that is a really good point to bring up, because remote viewing happens, and remote viewers are across the board. It's not anything of anybody of a certain political mindset, anybody of a certain spiritual mindset, anybody of a certain religious mindset. The experiences of Project Stargate and the research done and the findings found are that literally anybody can be trained in this. There was SRI for a long, long time. I remember I used to hear, I want to say I ordered the SRI videotape that you could order back in there. It may actively still be in a box in my mom's garage. I'd love to find that thing and just like transfer it. It's a 20 something year piece of history, but wow. I remember back in the day they had their ad that would run on Coast to Coast and you could, you know, order the videotape and see what it was all about and then order the course, stuff like that. And it was always fascinating to hear about. And a lot of that is what began my work in dream work and in dream travel and going to sleep with a purpose, going to sleep with the concept of finding an answer to something.
Yeah. I love that.
And I guess they're kind of akin, almost the same, but not really. Mine was definitely much more of a guided meditation that I was going to the same place every night. And that place that I went, I was going to meet my guide. And me and my guide would go and do things and talk, and explore. And that was my process to get to answer to, and, I wouldn't necessarily say that I astral traveled at any point. I definitely came to
ask you that. You're going out of body.
Well, I definitely came to the point of like, mental crash where things started happening. And then I just felt that crash back into my body.
Cool.
I've definitely felt that. So there was that moment just before release, but I guess that's what's hard for a lot of people, I suppose, is you do have to get ready for at least a few moments of you are not in control, right?
Yeah, I call it, sometimes when I snap back into my body, it feels like infinite falling, like you're going to fall forever, but you don't. You, like, hit the body.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah.
But it's scary. You got to get used to it. You have to give up control and surrender. And again, it's anti-programming. We're taught all this stuff is dangerous and unsafe, especially if you're from a standard religious background. You're taught that, you know, Ouija board is dangerous and portals are dangerous and psychic things are dangerous and psychics are, you know, what isn't dangerous, you know, in some religions? You know,
sticking your face in the fan is dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. So to get to the point where you're like, there is no real death. Yes, there's death of the avatar. Yes, we miss the beings and the animals and the relationships of people that pass. But pull back. We're eternal beings. I mean, most animals have spirits, not all, but most people have spirits. If you choose, you can continue the relationship, as many people know. Even if you're in 3D and they're in 12D, or, you know, they're on another planet in another body and living another life, and you're here, like, the non-locality is so huge in all of the things that we're talking about. You are not taught that. You're taught the opposite. You're taught that you can't know all things. You can't be connected to all things at once, like past, present, and future, for example. You can't be connected to all dimensions. Really, when I talk about densities and dimensions, I'm misspeaking, because all dimensions exist and that overlap. So right now we have access to the all. Right now we have access to the 7th and the 27th and the, I don't know how many dimensions there are. I've never figured it out between here and the all, but, you know, and it's so cool. If you understand non-locality, you're way toward developing your psychic abilities. But if you're under the programming of science, not that all science is wrong, it's not. Yeah. But you have to realize that even a materia medica from a medical textbook, or a materia medica from Chinese medicine or herbal medicine, this is a viewpoint usually of one person or a group of persons of how they see the world, of their relationship with plants, of their relationship with maybe ETs. We hear these abduction stories of their relationship with psychic abilities. And we take that as gospel truth. But what is truth for someone else is not necessarily truth for you. Again, opposite of what we're taught. We're taught, like, you know, this is this is a couch, you know, and couches look like this.
Yeah.
And this is a food program. I mean, you go to any country, they're going to eat a minimum of 3 meals a day. You don't find that odd? Any culture, any country, do we not see that that's a matrix game program? I mean, some of these things are so obvious that have been laid on us. But I would ask you, what is true for you? You know what's true for me? 1 meal a day is true for me.
Yeah.
What is true for you? You know, we have to start pulling out and saying, wait a minute, I'm an individual. Again, your government is never going to treat you like an individual. The military, I mean, they'll tell you. I mean, I have a military family. They definitely don't treat you like an individual. You know, a school is not necessarily even going, you're going to be put into, don't they tell us, isn't it interesting that they tell us when you go to school, you enroll in a what? A program.
Yep.
A program of study to tell us. You
I want to say my wife's nephew was in eighth grade, and we were all like, we were out playing Keno as the family, you know, like having dinner, things like that at a place in Massachusetts. And he was talking about how school was really boring sometimes. And, you know, there's a couple of subjects I like, but a lot I don't. And I was like, hey, buddy. And we had a pretty just conversational relationship for an eighth grader. And I was like, you know, let me explain something to you. I learned probably up around your age that school was a chance for me to see my friends 8 hours a day. You're going to have some work to do. I was like, what you are in right now is, quote, the Hessian school system, my friend. And yes, what you are being trained to do is the same menial 8-hour task all day long. It's called busy work. And when you go clock in for the man every day, not every hour is spent doing something actual. You probably get about 2.5 hours of actual work done.
Yeah.
The rest of it is process and fill out these forms this way just because. So that's what you're training for. You're training to literally be able to get through life on the daily as a worker bee in the world.
Obey.
And
no question.
And you have to see it as that. And that's okay. Like, hey, that's training. You know,
and if you choose that's okay. I never ever want to make anyone feel small if they have no interest in being psychic, because I will say something about those people. And even if they are fire creation, if you want to fully immerse yourself in a 3D marriage and a 3D job and a 3D house and a 3D money program and a 3D education, there's no judgment here. I don't want anyone to think I'm judging that. If you have no interest in psychic abilities or remote viewing or any of the things we're talking about, guess what? You chose the 3D as an experience, and you're in full experience. Bravo. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong. But some of us have been here a lot. I've been here a lot. You've been here a lot. And I'll speak for myself. We're done. We're ready to start getting ready for the next life and remembering who we are. And that's okay, too. You don't have to love 3D, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, I tell it to people I work with and contractors I work with all the time. Hey, not everybody is made for the freelance lifestyle. Not everybody is made for that 24/7 hustle. And the fact of, I may be working on Christmas. But when I work on Christmas, I get paid double.
Yeah. No,
so
you know,
feel free to call me for a Christmas gig, folks.
Not everyone's an entrepreneur. For sure. Not everybody wants to have their own business or wants that responsibility or wants that intensity. You know, we're all different and we're all, you know, and that's what I love about this reality. Everything I believe is real.
Yeah.
So if I believe in the programming and I believe in the school system and I believe in the medical system and I believe in the legal system and I believe in the politicians and I believe in the wars. Great. That it's real for me, and that's what I'm choosing. Now, here's where the wrinkle comes in for me, Chris.
Okay.
The mind wiping technology. Are they really choosing it if they don't remember who they are? Now, if they remember who they are and they're choosing it, that's a different scenario for me. So that's where I feel people like you and I come in. We are here for the people that want to choose something different. You know, we're here for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And much like we've said on the show numerous times, much like we've said with you, we all think that to affect change in the world, that we have to change the whole world or the whole paradigm, and you don't. You don't. You just have to nudge the carrier wave next to you. That's it.
Dude, you're giving me chills.
One out of five people who lived in the United States took place in the American Revolution. One out of five. The other four looked at him and pointed and went, "You are a nutbag."
From a proud family that did, thank you.
You know, like quite literally. So the fact you don't have to change the whole world. It's not an over surmountable obstacle. It's not making a mountain out of a molehill. It's literally kicking a little bit more dirt on top of the molehill, people.
It's the butterfly effect. I just watched the butterfly today, and they flap their wings like what, thousands of times, maybe hundreds of thousands of times, but just one butterfly flap has a ripple effect in the whole multiverse. Not even our universe, but the multiverse.
Even just the ripple effect. Take two stones, throw them in the pond, and watch the third wave get bigger when they meet.
Yeah.
Like.
So it's little changes. It's not even change your whole diet tomorrow. Yeah, it's not even give up your job and go move to a desert island. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying little, tiny, incremental, decisions that make your life better. It's not what, and you know what? For some people, a great life is living in a one-room cabin in the woods. And to some people, and you know this is true, Chris, that's someone's idea of hell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're called glampers. They're the people who can't go glamping without like their makeup mirror and batteries and what do you mean we don't have power at the campsite? what do you mean we don't have power at the campsite? How am I going to do without watching my Yellow Jackets on a Sunday night? Maybe you toast some marshmallows and just be still and listen, but. And we've got you for about another 30, 45 minutes or so, but let's start going through a typical remote viewing session. For those who haven't gone through one, how do you start out? What is the process of a remote viewing session, Dr. Kimberly?
Yeah, and again, my process for me is different from you know the military style too. So of course I don't do the military style because I was born natural remote viewing. So really for me, and it is this simple. So, for me, I'll give you an example. Nobody hire me for this because I'm not currently doing this. I just turned someone down for this job, by the way, but I used to do a lot of cheating remote views. So is my husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, cheating. Yes, PI work. I used to do a lot of PI work. And so what I would do is first I would stay out of their bodies because I don't want to merge if I don't have to, because there's an energy dig. My energy is generally higher than anyone I'm going to merge with. So who benefits? They benefit, I lose. How that works?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I don't go into their bodies. So what I do is they send me a picture, of the suspected cheater, and then a picture of the person, that's hiring me. Of course, I usually know what they look like. And I you'll understand this languaging, but I find the frequency signature in past or present, and I find them in a scenario. Now, I don't necessarily find them right now, because right now they might be, drinking a beer on the couch watching the game. So why am I going to go look at them now? Like, that's not going to tell me from the outside if they're cheating necessarily. So what I do is I scan through. I know what the frequency is of infidelity. I know what the frequency is of sex. I know what the frequency is, and I know what it feels like. I scan through their field where we hold all of our memories, not just all of our memories of this life, or not just all of our memories of the past lives, but all from the time we broke out of consciousness, from the all of our memories. Now, the technology that they use, they don't wipe our memories. They block us from remembering. So they put something between our spirit and the memory. So they don't literally, when we say memory wiping, they don't literally wipe your memories. they either implant false memories, which makes things really confusing, or they block your access to the memory. So that language scene is a little wrong when I use it and other people use it. But so I go into the field, and guess what? It's easier for me because I shouldn't really say this because now they'll probably make some new technology or improve this. But I've never had a problem accessing someone's memories. I have more problem accessing mine than I do other people's because I'm coming from the outside and they're putting the technology between your spirit and your memories. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But they're not blocking me from accessing your memories. So I go to his field or her field because we all know women cheat too. And, and I scan through till I find sexual addiction where they're in a strip club. Some people consider that cheating. Or I find when they're having this intense heart connecting, you know, all cheating isn't sexual.
Yes.
Sometimes what I find is repeated coffee dates and these long, and you can feel that's when I do merge. I check it. I'll merge with her. I'll merge with him when I see the scenario. And I'll be like, oh my gosh, like these people are like soulmates. Like they're much closer than he's ever been to his wife or husband or what, you know, whichever way it is. And, you know, I have to decide how much I'm going to tell and how I'm going to present it. And that's why I don't do it anymore. I mean, I've helped a lot of people. I will say this. Every person I've ever remote viewed has gotten a divorce. That's one reason it's kind of depressing I don't do it. Because let's go backwards. Let's spin this backwards. If you have to hire a private detective or remote viewer because you think your significant other's cheating, you have your answer already. You don't have to actually hire them. If you suspect it, you're intuitive. You're reading the frequencies. You know they are. You don't need me. You don't need a PI. That's why I don't think
what you probably need to do is explore what's going on between the two of you to begin with, because there's probably something amiss to whether there's an infidelity or not going on. It's probably the fact that there's something amiss in you about what's going on between you, you know?
You know, it's interesting as we're having this conversation, I would say people like you, audio engineers, people that have been in radio, musicians, piano players, people that have played a musical instrument for many years, people that can read music, people that love music, have listened to a lot of music and a lot of styles of music, that's all frequency. You're going to slip into things like remote viewing a lot easier because I just realized talking to you, which I've never formally mentally realized before, so much of how I remote view, it all goes back to frequency. Of course, you know, that's kind of like my whole life for many, many years, but I still work, even as I'm explaining it, I'm still explaining remote viewing in terms of frequency, how I do it and what I'm looking for. And, you know, when I need to merge, just to check from the outside, I can't always pick up like, you know, there's that feelings that we have when we're with someone that we're in love with or we're sexually attracted to. So I only merge to get confirmation of what I'm seeing on the outside as I'm observing them. But this all happens in microseconds. So I can hit this event, then hit this event, then hit this event, then hit this event. And then I put together kind of a compilation. And then also I walk out and I look at their car. And so sometimes I can get a license plate and I've gotten license plates. And then that created some legal problems for me.
Sure.
Because then I end up being pulled in divorces in court. And it's a mess because they chase down these people and threaten them. I mean, it's just a mess. I'm telling you, when you're a good remote viewer, it can be real messy. Do you see what I'm saying?
well, yeah. And I mean, I was going to say, especially the quote hopping in, I would imagine that there's a big reason that you don't do that anymore. And that's just really the fact of ethical quandary at some point, you know, are you hopping into somebody for the right reason? What are you, and not that like you're going in there and putting some kind of psychological wall
or doing it, but I've never done that,
it can kind of come to the point of, oh, I found somebody's diary, or, oh, I read the diary I found, you know?
Violating, I mean, I'm basically violating someone's privacy for money, or I was. I don't do that anymore,
exactly.
And I don't have to do it because if I wanted to do it, I could do it with the app, and I don't do it at all, just because I've been really humiliated being called in on divorce cases. Imagine a remote viewer being called in against their will to give. It's just a mess. It's a mess, and I get really
the court system isn't set up for anything psychic, obviously. So you get ranked over the court. It's just not worth it.
Yeah.
Not worth any amount of money to get involved in that. But that is my process. It's kind of like tapping. Okay, so here's my recommendation, actually. If you guys spend time learning how to read frequencies, which you actually already do, when you go house shopping, you read frequencies. You're like, this house feels really warm and it makes me feel good. This house feels really cold. Oh, I went one time with my realtor. She thought it was like a nut job. So we go on this property. It felt kind of dicey and I saw a couple things, but I mean, that's pretty typical. There's always cuts on every property. I open the front door and I walk in and I felt like I was going to throw up, which anyone who knows me and has ever heard me talk knows that that's a sign of a high level demonic dark energy for me. That's how I bodily react to it. So I said, I'm not looking at this house. I'm not walking through this house. And I turned around and walked out. And my realtor is like, what's wrong with you? And she like walked around the whole house. She went upstairs where there's a bunch of floor. It's just so.
This place is great. Different. It's so spacious.
She can't read frequency. But you guys, a lot of you guys that are listening to shows like this can. You have to start honoring that. You walk in a house and you have that bodily reaction. You walk in a room. You walk in a business meeting. You walk on a date. You walk down an alley or a parking garage or a store.
Amen.
Start honoring those frequencies, those bodily reactions. That's knowledge, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's literally knowledge of you being a part of that same frequency and acknowledging the fact that much like any physics, you know, like I could touch this crystal right now, and quite literally the whole reason I'm touching a crystal, by the way, doctor, I know you can't see me over the phone, but I'm touching a crystal right now. Now, if I was to vibrationally be able to, all of that is because my electron shell is repelling the electron shell of this crystal. By all physics, me and this crystal are both sharing an electron shell with you thousands of miles away right now.
Yeah.
However, if I was to hit the same resonant vibrational frequency of this crystal, my hand would go through it.
Yeah.
My hand would pass right through the crystal. So,
right.
Technically,
that is possible that you can raise your frequency to, again, above, is actually above in the case of some physical structure like your house, and go through walls. I have only raised my frequency to where the walls disappear. I have not, that I know of, in this body, walked through a wall. It's the same with levitation. As you embody these upper dimensions and bring them down into the third dimension, then you have the qualities, as you're saying, the resonant qualities of these dimensions, like levitation, like walking through walls. And that is in this physical body. So, and we know it's possible. We've seen it. We've heard it. You know, a lot of the monks have a lot of these. Tibetans, again, the Tibetan monks have a lot. Sure. You know, they levitate fairly easily. And we see that. I mean, we might not believe it, but there's a lot of videos of it. You can go Google it, you know, tonight and watch them on YouTube. So it is possible.
Oh, absolutely. It's possible. And you know, we are finding more and more and more that these things are being confirmed by quantum physics. These ideas that meditators, yogis, even remote viewing and the strange science of remote viewing and how it's possible. Quantum mechanics and quantum physics are proving on the daily. And it's really fascinating to see kind of the reverse, where that Isaac Asimov concept of when high technology comes to a certain people, it's like magic. We've kind of reversed that. Now the magic is science. This thing that was once like thought about, taught about for millennia as only a certain people can do it or are tapped into it. No, it's that only one out of five people are willing to say, yes, that's there. That's even a possibility. So out of that 20%, you have to carve out the ones that are capable, you know, which drastically lowers the percent from the actual 20 it should be.
And I would
in Willie. I mean, I still regularly face a lot of harassment and ridicule for who I am. And you have to be able to take that in order to walk in your abilities and, you know, even improve your abilities. You have to put yourself out there and be willing to take that backlash, let's say, that, that you're still going to get in 3D. You're not going to get that, you know, when you're going in the eighth dimension. They're going to be like, what do you mean you're a remote viewer? Who cares? Yeah. Everybody's a remote viewer. You
you don't care how you came to the party. Welcome to the party, guy.
We
don't care if you took a bus, a subway, an Uber, if you walked. Welcome to the party.
And again, I think it's so funny that everybody wants to see the four and five, you know, six dimensions, whatever. But all the beings in the, you know, forest, you know, fifth and sixth dimension, they're like, what do you mean you're a remote viewer? Yeah, hello, everybody here is. Like, who cares? Like, everybody's psychic. Everybody, you know, knows things and can change timelines and can astral travel and can, I was telling, everybody's like, what do you do before you go to sleep? And I'm like, I spiritual battle. And I go, what do you mean spiritual battle? And I'm like, I battle all my enemies in the astral. And they're like, huh? Of course you do. What does that mean? But to me, this is like breathing. But if I say that in public, I mean, they're going to be like, you need a psych evaluation.
Well, and you know, it really is like you said, much like any point of faith. It has to be something that is concrete to you, that is immovable.
That's right. That's so good. That's so good. I love what you just said. I love that. And we call it power scanning. And, you know, when we look at the third chakra, you can tell the people that are willing to go there because your third chakra is in your gut. It's the center of your being and you're grounded. And you have to be, I know you guys probably don't think I'm grounded, but you actually have to be very, very grounded to do this work because you can't be easily dissuaded or you won't progress to an excellent skill and a high level if you let people influence you. You know, you have to be very, very, like you said, you know, immovable in who you are.
Very much resolved in the fact of, this is me, this is who I am, this is what I believe, you know, and just being okay with it, very much accepting yourself for who you are. And that's hard. That's hard for a lot of people. You know, we talk about it like it's really easy, Dr. Kimberly. Underneath this shirt I'm wearing right now is a tie-dye shirt. And even for me, as somebody who mixed hippie jam bands and stuff like that, it took me till my mid-40s to ditch everything except for tie-dye.
Wow, I love it.
And I'm either in black because I'm blending into the background at a show, or I'm in tie-dye.
Oh, I love it. No shame.
It's the extreme. but most people, I think, live in that kind of extreme. Most people, I think, have to put on some kind of mask when they go into work. You know, like we were saying a while ago, and it's hard to accept yourself for who you are. And until you are really, really comfortable in your own skin, it can be hard to travel outside your skin.
And don't think I always was. I mean, I was put in a family where I was deliberately handled and traumatized and made to feel small. And so there was a lot of self-worth issues in me, and only I would say in the last 10 years have I really overcome. And now I try to practice radical self-love and nurture and also radical self-forgiveness. If you can really forgive yourself anything, then you can release fear and shame and you're pretty much golden.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm actively showing up on screen right now some of the panels and classes and things like that that you do. Let's spend the last few minutes talking about what services you provide that help people in the world of remote viewing, that help people prepare themselves for the world of remote viewing, astral travel, astral battle on the nightly, as you're saying. Well, because we've said it before, and I'll always say it that we don't necessarily destroy our demons. We just kind of learn to live in the world with them.
Oh, totally, totally. And I only battle those that I can't negotiate with. And people are like, "What do you mean you can negotiate with your enemies?" Yeah, they're individuals.
It's called the truce. It's called the truce. Oh, we have them actively with a couple countries.
Yep, exactly. I love that you say. I've actually used to have an enemy with one of the major gods, and he was after me, and I almost died by getting struck by lightning, and a long, long story. And anyway, we're under a great truce in favor with each other now. So again, that's a little bit shamanic. People would place that under shamanism, but I just place it under, I mean, the gods. A lot of you guys are the gods and goddesses, so you do have these relationships. Some of you are friends, some of you are lovers, some of you are enemies, some of you are married to these beings, but we don't remember. But if you can remember and you know who you are, you can have the most brilliant assets. I actually have a weird little story I'd like to tell before I answer your question, if that's okay. So I was communing in my woods with the trees in the forest, having my la-la time this afternoon. It was a beautiful day in North Carolina, and I live in the mountains in the woods, of course. It's just me. and I have this man, and he has a circular driveway. So he can come out his driveway to the woods across the street from him, or he can come out his driveway directly across from my house and stare at my house and be all nosy. You know, like sometimes old men have too much time on their hands. No offense, but they seem to. And he's just kind of that nosy neighbor. So I try not to let him annoy me. But when you move to the mountains in the middle of the woods, you want what? You want privacy. So, of course, he does sometimes get under my skin. So I was communing with the trees, and the trees were like saying, and they were just telling me things I already knew. You know, you have guardians and the Sasquatch and Dogman. That's a whole other conversation. But, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I know. Thank you. And I had this really peaceful moment. All of a sudden, there was this huge crash. And I was just thinking about the neighbor this morning and how, why can't he come out the other side of his driveway? Because it sets off my cameras and bothers my dog, but whatever. So there's this huge crash, and I'm like, oh, did one of my trees snap or fall? Because I'm like communing with the trees, you know, maybe they're trying to tell me something. So my dog started barking, and I walked out front. Would you not know it? A giant tree had fallen over that side of the driveway that I was just thinking about in my head, complaining about, you know, kind of to myself. And you know what I said to my daughter? I texted my oldest daughter, and I said, never make a goddess angry who's friends with a tree. And you guys think that's coincidence? There's nothing. There's no coincidence in the Matrix. Like, you guys are all that powerful. But anyway, I just had to tell you that little story. That was a random little story. But so we are much more, we can influence matter. We can, you know, in that case, I believe the tree is aligned with me, not, you know, a god or goddess. But, you know, but a lot of you are, you know, were written about. You know, they burned the Library of Alexandria for a reason. That was a random. They burned your history. They burned our memories. You know, or they tried, of course. They relocated under the Vatican, and that's a whole nother show. But okay, so what do I offer? I offer monthly mentoring programs. I have Ultimate Awakening, which is woo, and then I have Ultimate Elite, which is woo-woo. And in Ultimate Elite, I try to keep you updated on things that I know about what's going on in the world, not what they tell you in mainstream media, not what they tell you in conspiracy, but what is really, really happening. And I have many ways that I get that information, but I share that in Ultimate Elite. And I also teach about things like karma. I teach about, I just taught about the different types of fire creation spirits. So we're all like, everybody has a spirit, but wait, are there different types of spirits? Yes, there are. Mm-hmm. And I taught about that. I teach about karma. I taught a whole thing about soulmates. Do you have a soulmate in 3D? Do you have multiple soulmates in 3D? Have you met more than one soulmate? Are you married? Are you with your soulmate? Do you have a soulmate outside of 3D? So we went through all that. So we talk about a lot of these esoteric topics, and we dig really deep, and a lot of people don't. A lot of people just do the standard rubber stamp, you know, this is the way it is, and it's not necessarily that way. So I try to give a different point of view based on my point of view, of course. And then we offer scans. We offer MILAB scans. Have you been abducted? Have you been taken? Do you suspect you're being taken? Are you interacting with incubus succubus at night? I'll tell you, almost everybody is. I can just say that right now. All sorts of things we do in the MILAB scan, and also in our TAP. We have a TAP scan, which is a lower price scan. So if you say there's something really weird going on with my neck, or I want to know what I need to do to up level spiritually, or just scan me and tell me what my spirit's saying, you know, that's what that's for. And then we have a full scan, and a full scan is going to cover metaphysical, physical, emotional, mental, life things, food, like pretty much everything.
And for all you TIs out there, she's also got an MK Ultra scan.
Yeah, we can tell you if you're targeted, how you're being targeted, it's targeting you. If you're V2K, if you have eye implants, if we can tell you like all those details that the, you know, TI community, you know, you guys know what I mean, yeah. Talk about. Are you being, you know, followed, or do you just think you're being followed? You know, all that stuff.
Now, what about the new boot camp that you have going on?
Oh, yeah, thank you. I forgot about that. That actually fits in with our remote viewing conversation because what I do, and we have a boot camp. It's going to be in June, and the reason it's so far out is because we have an artist that's drawing your guys' spirit family and or spirit guides. And how I see who your spirit guides are, as soon as you enroll in the class, I immediately, they usually come to me, actually, or I go into your field, and they're just there standing, you know, around you. And so then an artist is going to draw. You're actually going to get a picture, you know, that you can frame or do throw in the trash, whatever you want to do with it, of your spirit guides. And I'm going to tell you all about them. And there's a good chance that a lot of them will come to class and they'll have messages and want to have conversations with you too. So we're going to do that live. And I'm going to teach about all the different types of guides that you have, because it's not just your grandma. It's not just your pet. It's ETs. It's Fae. It's Sasquatch. There's just so many, you know, it is animals, but not necessarily domestic animals. It's trees. It's plants. The beans coming in, we already have, like, I think we have 10 people registered already. There is a limit of 50 because, obviously, there's a lot of work for me to do and there's a lot of work for the artist to do.
And it's just the fact of, like, with any class.
You don't want it to be 20.
Well, I mean, you want to make sure to give the individual attention to each student that they deserve and require. And in addition to that, you also have one-on-one sessions. And I'm here to tell you, folks, before Dr. Kim's first appearance, she asked me to send her a photo and did an auric reading on me. And the information that she shared with me before the show was, and even on the show, because I remember Billy Joe Kane, our good friend from Radical Empathy Education and PBJ Learning, was in studio. And his jaw was dropping off camera. You proceeded to tell me things like my body craves lavender, CBD, that I want to actively be around crystals all the time. All kinds of things like that, that were really, really phenomenal for you to know that had you never been inside the walls of my home, you would probably never, ever know. Mm-hmm. So I am here to attest to, at the least, your reading ability.
And yeah, they're very specific, you guys. It's not like, someday this is going to happen somewhere. It's like specific, right? It's specific.
Yeah. And I mean, now with your aura technology, everything else, what do people have to do to get one of those readings done by you?
Yeah, they just have to go to my website. It's under services, I think. Yeah, okay. We're working on the website, but I think they're there. And one-on-ones only open up occasionally. We have a live event usually once a year, but that's full of us in Sedona this year. That's going to be phenomenal. But we do have live events. And again, that's why it's nice to come into my monthly mentoring programs, because that's my core group. The other benefit of coming into either one of my monthly mentoring programs is you have now – I shouldn't say this, but you have access to me. So I'm not going to nickel and dime you if you ask me a question. If you say, people ask me which dog to get, or my opinion on which is the higher frequency dog, or they had a dream and what do I think about it? Like, you get that light kind of daily monthly access to me, and I'm not charging you for an email reading. I'm not charging you for a one-on-one, and I'm not charging you for a spin. Why? Because I believe in energy exchange. And you understand this too, Chris. Yeah. If you're going to commit to support me and my family and my business and my vision and my work every month, then I'm going to commit back to you and give you more than just, you know, the class. I'm also going to commit and invest in your life.
Yeah. Darn tootin'. Exactly. Because it is, I mean, hey, the universe is a slinky. They're real cool to look at. They don't do anything unless you actively play with them. You gotta actively push for it to spring back and do its slinky thing. Otherwise, it just sits there, you know. A lot of potential energy wound up in it.
Yeah.
Nothing if you don't move it yourself. So thank you for always taking the time to come on, for talking about these topics, and for doing the work that you do out there, Dr. Kim.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for giving us a platform, all the people that you do. And, you know, I just appreciate different points of views. You know, you guys don't have to agree with all Chris's guests, but I mean, I think we can all agree in appreciation that he exposes us to a lot of things we may not have heard of or considered. And that alone opens up your field to possibility. And that's exciting. So thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And hold the line while we close things out. Sure. Because, I mean, really, for me, the fact that, once again, just to loop it back to the beginning of the conversation this evening, our government spent millions of dollars on this. You can poop the idea all you want. But it was a successful program. It was a program that anybody involved with it will say, quote, the intelligence that we gathered was invaluable. When you gather invaluable intelligence, like, that's as good as boots on the ground, son. Like, that's pretty incredible to hear alphabet agencies say that it was that accurate. And once again, this is nothing that you have to be a part of any program to do. It's something that you can do with a modicum of training, things like that. Make sure, folks, to stop on by secretofeverything.com. That is the website for Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. Make sure to stop on by that. Set up your appointment with her. She can get you started on your journey of remote viewing, to say the least. More than that, she can help you in so many other ways. While you are online checking that out, make sure to stop on by the Knowledge Vault. That's where you can find things like Project Stargate. That's where you can find all of the amazing declassified documents and more. Make sure to stop on by. Check out our live stream. We are so, so happy to be coming to you live from events like our first one coming up at the end of April, the Bigfoot Roadshow in Mineola, Texas. Cannot wait to be back out there, checking that out, to be back on the air with our good friends, the Millers, who are putting that on. Cannot wait to go out and be a part of the MUFON Symposium. Looking forward to all of these great events and meeting all of you folks in person at them. So take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.